to my face, I hunch over as I weep loudly, consumed by pain and consuming every little bit of tears I have left. The crying, the washing, the wailing, it's my catharsis. It's my mourning of things that never happened to me, but happened to me all the same. More than anything, it's the last time I'll let Eamon influence me in any way. Too many times I've given him the benefit of the doubt when I shouldn't have. Even now, I know I would have made excuses for him, that it was all a mistake, that it couldn't possibly be him. If his words had not been so irrevocably his own, who else would have known he called me Lizzie Mine? Who else would have been able to contrive his manner so perfectly? It was Eamon, my lover and my heartbreak. But from now on, he will only be my regret and disappointment, my enemy. I don't know how much longer I spend in the bathroom. I seem to have an endless supply of tears where he is concerned, and no matter how much I try to stop myself, they will simply not stop. I cry. I cry and cry and cry until my heart breaks and my soul fractures. I cry until I'm ready to relegate him to the past. When the water grows too cold for me to be able to sit in it, I finally get out of the bath. Getting a towel and wiping myself, I wrap it around myself before I exit the bathroom. As I open the door, though, I come face to face with the last person I want to see. Caleb. His face is ravaged by pain, his features scrunched up in worry. "What are you doing here?" I whisper. But as I take a step forward, I trip on the doorframe. My arms flail out, and before I know it, I'm on the floor on my ass, my towel unwrapped all around me. My knees are spread, my elbows back as I try to keep my balance, and I'm completely naked. Caleb mutters a curse under his breath as he picks me up from the floor, placing me gently on the bed. I gulp down as I try to say something, but no words come to mind. I can only stare at him. So strong, so reliable, so damn handsome. More tears form at the corners of my eyes before I release a loud sniffle, breaking once more into sobs. He cradles me to his chest.
What happened?
He murmurs in my hair, drawing back just enough to study my face. I bite my lips as the tears stream down my cheeks. I'm sad, I eventually say. It sounds stupid to my ears. It should sound the same to his. But he doesn't seem concerned as he looks at me with worry and far too much love than I deserve. Certainly not after I spent the last hour crying about another man.
Why?
He asks softly. I shake my head, unable to give him an answer.
Darling.
He coos gently, tucking my wet hair behind my ears as he leans forward to catch a tear with his tongue.
I'm here now.
He whispers.
I'm here, and I'll take care of you.
He says, as he licks my cheek from my chin to my eye. He does the same to the other one, capturing my still falling tears, eating my sorrows away.
All these tears,
he rasps.
They're mine now, aren't they?
He asks in a smoky tone. I can't help but nod as I lose myself in his gaze and the intensity of his presence. Everything that makes me forget the past. He's so big in my small room, taking far too much space, and for a moment I feel slightly alarmed. Yet it's not for long, certainly not with how careful and gentle he is with me. So much so that I forget that I'm completely naked with him. I forget everything but the touch of his hand on my back, slowly stroking me, comforting me in a way I didn't know I needed. My knees are to my chest, as I huddle into a small ball. He fits his body against mine, his arms drawing me into his embrace. His mouth is still on my face, licking at my tears, swallowing every bit of my heartache and turning it into something different. Something... Caleb, I whisper, cupping his cheeks with my hands as I search his face. Kiss me.
You never have to ask, darling,
he says, before his mouth is on mine, his lips clashing with mine as he forces me to open to him, let him in and share everything that I am with him. I cling to him, my arms wound tight around his neck as I rock myself back and forth against him, seeking to absorb every bit of his heat. From the moment his lips touch mine, the kiss is wild and out of control, mirroring my emotions and this out-of-control need for him, for his touch and for his unique brand of comfort. I want to feel his arms around me, his big hands on my body. I want to feel him everywhere, just so I can erase the violation from before, just so I can be whole again.
My darling girl.
He rasps against my lips as he continues to lay kisses all over my tear-stained cheeks and my red-rimmed eyes. He holds me reverently to him as he places his lips on one eyelid, lingering for a moment before moving to the other. In his embrace, I feel so safe, like I never have to wonder about tomorrow again, like all the worries in my life have suddenly disappeared. When he's done kissing every little inch of my skin, he moves lower, his mouth trailing down my neck, right as he scrapes his teeth lightly against my skin. I'm so lost to this sea of sensation, to this maelstrom of pleasure, that I no longer care how far this goes. I'm simply his for the taking. His mouth opens over my pulse point, sucking my skin in at the same time as his hands cup my breasts, his thumbs brushing softly over my erect nipples. A gasp escapes me, my spine arching as I urge him to continue what he's doing. Please, I moan softly, feeling him absolutely everywhere. His mouth continues its descent down my neck, alternating between kissing and sucking and biting every now and then. I can feel him lay his claim on me, his red kisses embedded in my skin, and leaving a mark for all to see that I'm his and only his. Because, regardless of what happened in the past, in this life, I'm his. Only his.
Fuck, love. You're killing me.
He speaks harshly, his breath on my skin. His lips move downwards, and before I know it, he has one nipple in his mouth, sucking on it before biting ever so lightly. I arch my back encouragingly. Desire pools low in my belly, and I find myself growing wetter and wetter between my legs. In no time, I've lost all my inhibitions as I seek to have his mouth on me, time and time again. More, please, I mumble incoherently, my hands in his hair as I urge him on. He alternates between licking and sucking on my nipples, his hot mouth proving to be my undoing, as I feel a storm build inside of me. I lose myself in his touch, in everything he does to me, and every little bit of pleasure he wrings from my body.
I'm all yours, darling.
He tells me huskily.
Just like you're all mine, aren't you?
I nod effusively. Anything to get him to touch me more, kiss me in more places, and give me the blessing that is his mouth. All yours, I agree, hugging him closer.
That's all I want to hear.
He murmurs softly.
That I'm the only one to touch you.
I gasp softly as I push my chest towards him. He chuckles when he sees my enthusiasm, and giving me one long lick between the valley of my breasts, he moves lower. His mouth opens over my stomach, and he lays sloppy kisses everywhere, licking me thoroughly. Dipping one hand between my legs, he finds me completely drenched as he parts my folds with two fingers. He touches me lower and lower until... My eyes widen as I remember I'd just gotten my period, and I'm likely drenched from the blood. Wait! I squeak, pushing at his shoulders. He pauses, his black eyes pinning me to the spot as he gazes at me assertively. His mouth tips up in a wicked smile, and before I can tell him that he can't touch me there, that it's messy and he'll get dirty, he brings the same red-stained finger to his lips, sucking it clean. My eyes flash wide open.
You're mine, darling, in any way, shape, or form. That means this is mine, too.
Biting my lip in apprehension, I can only nod, unable to form a coherent reply. Do people do this? I'm not knowledgeable enough to know if it's the norm, but if he says he's fine with it, then... My train of thought is interrupted as he pulls me to him, his hands on my butt as he spreads me open to accommodate the breadth of his shoulders. What? His lips settle over my sex, and he gives me an open-mouthed kiss there. To say I'm scandalized by the naughtiness of it all would be an understatement, but I can't muster any maidenly concerns as he brings the rough pad of his fingers over my bundle of nerves, caressing it softly until I'm bucking in his arms.
You're so wet, darling.
He blows hot air over my damp folds, the effect immediate on my senses. He brings his tongue to my opening, breaching me and flicking it in and out while his thumb massages that sensitive bud.
So wet for me.
He drawls as he drinks my very essence. The entire action is infinitely decadent as he touches me in places I've barely touched myself before, kissing me and tasting me so intimately. But more than anything, I can see how much he enjoys it, my pleasure automatically converting into his pleasure.
Delicious.
He praises, speaking against my core and making me buck against him with every vibration of his mouth.
You're so fucking sweet, Darcy, darling.
He continues, pausing to inhale my scent into his nostrils. My core clenches with every little touch of his lips, every feathery brush of his tongue, every wet slide of his mouth against me. But it's nothing compared to the guttural sounds he makes, the noises of pure male satisfaction that fill my ears as he simply devours me. He savors with gusto the combination of blood and arousal, lapping at my sex as if it's the best meal he's ever had.
You're my sweetest miracle.
He groans as he gives me a long lick.
My innocent little temptation.
He continues as he flicks his tongue in and out of my entrance. Everything he does to me is designed to titillate and push me to the edge in a slow and torturous dance, but one that has me enjoy the journey more than the final event. He's too good at this, reading my body like an open book and taking note of every little cue and non-spoken signal, almost as if he knew my body better than I know it myself.
My lovely enchantress and my fucking seductress, aren't you, darling?
He coos gently. Yes, I whisper. I'll be anything you want me to be. I tell him in a moment of pure madness as a new Darcy emerges from somewhere deep within me.
Good.
He purrs against me, nuzzling his face between my legs in a way that is both ticklish and pleasurable, and I can't help but release a half-giggle that echoes into a moan. Though initially I might have been embarrassed to have him so intimately between my legs, I soon lose all inhibitions as I give in to pure sensation and him, letting him be my guide and master of my body.
This is all mine, isn't it, Darcy? Tell me.
He rasps as he raises his head to look at me.
Promise me.
He repeats. My lids are half closed, but even so, I can make out the blood clinging to his lips and trickling down his chin. And yet, the sight doesn't disgust me. If anything, it makes me deliciously tense, knots appearing in my lower belly as more wetness gushes out of me. There's something incredibly primal and sexy about the way he's tasting every bit of my essence, my arousal and my life's blood. It's all for you, I moan, wiggling my hips to get him to continue his ministrations. Still watching me, he continues to work my bud with his thumb, alternating between caressing it softly and rubbing it vigorously, so much so that every muscle in my body strains and weeps for relief. My breathing intensifies, and I know I'm simply at his mercy.
Have you orgasmed before, love?
He suddenly asks, as he nuzzles his stubble against my inner thigh, scraping my skin lightly before kissing it softly.
Have you made yourself come before?
I shake my head, and a devilish grin appears on his face.
Good girl. All your firsts are mine, Darcy. Now and forever. You understand me?
I swallow against the wave of pleasure that hits me as I move my chin up and down in a tentative nod. Yet as soon as he shifts the tempo of his fingers, my head falls back, my mouth open as I release moan after moan, chanting his name as the sweetest and most torturous melody. The pleasure keeps on building inside of me as he brings his mouth once more to my sex, licking me thoroughly before wrapping his lips around my bud and sucking hard on it. His hand moves lower, a finger probing at my entrance. Soon, he establishes a rhythm as he licks me while thrusting his fingers in and out of me. My mind blanks on me just as every muscle in my body suddenly tenses. Caleb! I gasp as the orgasm overtakes me, taking me to the highest high, before unfortunately making me crash back to earth.
I'm here.
He whispers as he continues to lick me, almost as if he's devouring me.
I'm all here, Darcy, and I'm never letting you go.
The flat of his tongue covers my entire sex as he gathers all of my wetness into his mouth, imbibing everything that I am.
One more,
he whispers.
Give me one more.
I'm about to tell him I can't possibly do that, but he adds another finger to my opening, slowly stretching me. Moving both fingers in and out of me, I find myself screaming my pleasure out loud. My hands are tightly wrapped in his hair as I keep him between my legs, my eyes fluttering closed as I gyrate my hips around, seeking more of his touch. And he gives it to me. God, but he gives it to me.
Fuck me, darling. You're so hot. So fucking hot. Come for me.
He demands harshly as he increases the rhythm of his thrusts.
Come on my tongue, Darcy. Give me everything, sweetheart. I want to taste your blood, your pleasure, everything that makes you, you.
I'm no longer in control of my limbs as I thrash my head from side to side, my fingers tightening in his scalp as I feel another wave wash over me.
That's it, sweetheart. Give me everything, every fucking thing.
He orders, and I do. Oh, but I do. So much so that my toes curl as I push the heels of my feet into the mattress. My back arches off the bed, and my thighs squeeze him, keeping him rooted to the spot. Pleasure pulsates in every atom of my body, in every single cell. And it's all because of him. All because of this magnificent, selfless man before me. My body becomes languid and relaxed as my eyes close, my consciousness drifting from me. Yet as drowsiness slowly seeps in, I have the vague impression that for the longest time he's still lapping at me, drinking me in, as if what hides between my legs is the most potent ambrosia. Only when he's truly sated does he move up, gathering me in his arms and letting me use him as a pillow. That night, despite all the heartache and disappointment, I sleep better than I have in my entire life, and I know there's only one reason for it. Him. Sometimes, doors close just so others can open. Journeys end just so new ones can begin. Caleb Hale is my next destination. Chapter 19. January, 1791. London, Great Britain. What did you find out? When are we leaving for the country? I inquire as Mary comes inside. I'd asked her to inquire among the other servants. Sure, one of them would have heard when my mother planned to leave for Havisham. Mary shakes her head slowly.
Your mother has no intention of leaving for the country any time soon, my lady.
She tells me with a sigh. But... My shoulders slump in defeat as I plop myself back in my chair. My eyes are blank and unmoving as I simply stare at the empty wall.
Maybe you could talk to her?
She offers kindly. No, thank you, Mary. That will be all. I give her a small nod. She takes my meaning well as she soon retires, closing the door behind her and leaving me alone. All alone with my misery. In the 2 months since Eamon's attack at the Berkeley House, everything had devolved into chaos. Thankfully, he'd saved Emma and the rest of the innocent people in the house. But that hadn't been much of a consolation for the Berkeley family, who is still mourning the death of their only son. Emma, too buried in grief, slowly stopped talking to me. Not that I blame her after everything that happened. She doesn't know the extent of what occurred that night, or what the real cause of the fire was. She thinks that I'd somehow been awakened by the smoke and carried out. Initially, I'd try to be by her side and help her through her pain, but it hadn't worked. Not only had I felt like an impostor by her side, comforting her about her brother, while knowing that I, too, had a hand in murdering him, but I'd seen her need to be alone and deal with everything by herself, so I hadn't pried further. When she's ready to talk to me again, I will be here, waiting. But I fear the guilt that assails me every time I look upon her will never go away. The papers had called the fire an unfortunate incident, and the entire town is mourning the death of the young Viscount Berkeley. Yet it seems very few people knew how wicked he was behind his easygoing facade. Certainly, I would have never thought he could be so depraved as to wish me harm for something entirely not my fault. Something Eamon had done out of his inane jealousy. I'd only had one moment with him before he disappeared, and I'd made my stance clear towards him, that I don't approve of his actions and his solutions. After that, Eamon hadn't lingered. I'd barely finished telling him off for the disaster he'd created when he'd vanished into thin air, as he always does. And he hasn't returned since. Now I'm regretting my words. At the time, I'd been too volatile. I'd just seen him slaughter 4 people with his inhuman powers, and with no remorse at all. To say I'd been slightly shocked would be an understatement. As such, my words may have been more biting than I would have liked. Despite everything, I would have hoped he would show up again and hear me out. And he hasn't. I sigh as I rest my elbow on my table,
disappointment filling me as I realize my mother will not allow us to return to the country until summertime. Unlikely even then. She is absolutely bent on finding me a match, and even though she'd seen my reaction to the fire and the slow decay of my friendship with Emma, she'd continued with her absurd quest to see me married. That has manifested itself in several ways, not in the least the fact that she's forcing me to attend every ball and gathering, introducing me to various bachelors in hopes something would work. Of course nothing will work. I do not want to be wed, not now, nor ever. Eamon might be a bloodthirsty demon and monster, as my mother doesn't shy away from calling him, but he is still the only one who claims my heart. He is mine, just like I am his. Now, and for the days to come. I am certain, in fact, that if I were to wed anyone, Eamon would ensure that man never made it to the wedding day. If before I'd thought that his jealousy was out of bounds, what he'd done to Viscount Berkeley had cemented it. Eamon would take offense at any little thing, I'm sure, which is why I haven't danced with anyone despite attending all these events. I might get the urge to irk him just like that, but I would never risk an innocent man's life to do it. The perks of falling for a demon. Tired of feeling sorry for myself, I take a blank piece of paper, dip my quill into the inkwell, and pen the first words. Dearest Eamon. I pause, pursing my lips as I realize I have no idea what I want to tell him. Sorry for reacting adversely to the murder. That sounds mildly deranged. Thank you for saving me. There. That's better. He had, after all, saved me. Yet as I try to continue, I cannot for the life of me find the words to tell him to come back, to return to me. Deep within me, I am sure he hasn't abandoned me. I don't know how, but I simply do. I'm more concerned about him thinking I hate him when I don't, that I feel disgusted by him after I'd seen him act like that. Though I'd been quite scathing with my remarks, I hadn't really meant any. Yes, I am aware his nature's more bizarre than I am accustomed to, but that is solely by virtue of his otherworldly abilities. I dare say the men he'd killed had been more monstrous than he can ever be. He might be a demon, but he is my demon. The tip of my quill touches the paper as words of affection suffuse my being. Instead of thinking too much about it, I just let my heart dictate the letter. Dearest Eamon, thank you for saving me. I'm sorry for my ungrateful behavior and biting words. I was beside myself with worry and terror, and I fear I might have come on too strong towards you. I do not begrudge you what you've done. I can only be happy that you appeared when you did and protected me. It's been 2 months, and I haven't heard from you. I miss you. Maybe it's wrong of me to feel so, but I cannot stop my heart from yearning for you. You've shown me your true face, the destruction you are capable of, and I want to let you know that I am not scared, not anymore. I want you as you are, just Eamon, my Eamon. Eternally yours, Lizzie. Once I'm satisfied with the letter, I fold it carefully, dabbing a little bit of scented water over it. Rising up, I head to the window, opening it and arranging for a little nook on the ledge where I can deposit the letter. I may not be entirely sure how he does it, but there's no doubt in my mind that he will receive it. Mayhap even grace me with his company soon. A silly smile appears on my face as I bring the letter to my lips, giving it a quick kiss before leaving it in that spot. Yet, as I'm about to close the window, my brows scrunch up in confusion as I spot a foreign carriage stop in front of our townhouse. It doesn't have any recognizable emblem or coat of arms, though it looks to be new and expensive. But at this hour... A quick glance at the mantel clock tells me it's entirely improper to receive visitors at 1 o'clock at night. Sliding close to the edge of the wall so I won't be seen, I sneak a peek at the people who get out of the carriage. Two tall gentlemen whose looks, strength, and countenance remind me of Aemon. I blink in confusion when I note they are swiftly received within the house. A little odd. I don't trust my mother where Aemon is concerned, and I know she would do whatever she could to kill him, neutralize him, as she'd so objectively put it. Curiosity gets the best of me as I quickly pull a shawl over my shoulders and slide the door to my room open, just in time to hear my mother greet the gentlemen and tell them to adjourn in my late father's study. With years of experience sneaking around and eavesdropping on my family, I do my best to quiet my steps as I go down the stairs. It's already late, and save for my mother's lady's maid, everyone has retired for the day. Careful to avoid the creaking of the floors, I successfully get to the landing of the stairs before I tiptoe to the back of the house where the study is. Yet as I get in front of the door, I realize my mother had closed it shut. No matter how much I try to fit my ear to the wood, I can't make any sounds. Even more odd, isn't it? Why would two strange men visit my mother in the middle of the night if it wasn't some type of coven business? Not one to be deterred by a closed door, I put on a pair of slippers and go outside the house through the servants' entrance. Rounding the house until I reach the study's window, I smile to myself as I note it's half open. And if I climb just a little higher, I can listen to everything. It's unfortunate I cannot see, but with my situation as precarious as it is, I'm not going to risk it, especially as one of the men speaks first, my eyes widening as I realize my hunch had been right. This is about Aemon.
The Holy See has received your request, Lady Montford, and we are here to provide you with guidance.
I didn't think they were going to send you. My mother clasps her hands together. It's so good you have come. As I've outlined in my previous letter, I am sure this is about the same demon that Elder Ambrosius spoke about in his account. Considering the lives lost more than 1,000 years ago, I would say this deserves immediate attention.
1,000 years ago? Aemon is that old? My eyebrows crease with the new information. I'd never asked him his age. Maybe I should have.
You would be correct, my lady. The Supreme Authority delegated us to assist you with our knowledge about this demon.
The other man notes, yet his tone suggests skepticism.
Our job as demonologists is to study these entities and make notes on them.
I am happy the Supreme Authority decided to take my claims seriously, Fiona says. Why don't we just go to the topic? How do you kill this Aemon? I've already tried everything the elders wrote in the Codex, and none of the usual spells worked on him. Not even the hallowed barrel powder we used when we shot him. I've consulted with other members of the coven, and they were equally as mystified.
One of the men clears his throat.
Aemon is not a regular demon, my lady. It wasn't coincidental that Elder Ambrosius named him an archdemon. His powers are far above those of regular evil entities, and he will not be able to defeat him with one codex alone.
I frown. He must be referring to the forbidden spells, then, since those are the only ones for which you need all the codices assembled together.
What can you tell me about him?
Fiona's voice wobbles as she asks the question.
There are accounts of him going some 2,000 years before.
One man starts.
Ancient scrolls talk of Aemon, who influenced kings and emperors, leading from the shadows. In fact, we have reason to believe he could have been the inspiration behind the ancient Egyptian god Aemon.
Dear Lord,
my mother gasps. I would, too, if I could afford to make any noise. Ancient Egyptian god Aemon, but that would make him not just 1,000 years old, but thousands. Cold seeps through my clothes, My shawl is not enough for the temperature outside. Despite forcing myself to stay still and listen, I can't help my own body rebelling against me as shivers overtake me. Taking a deep breath, I do my best to be quiet as I fit myself better to the outer wall.
No wonder I wasn't able to harm him, if he's capable of such things. I don't want to imagine what he could do if he ever got his hands on my daughter.
We are here to ensure that doesn't happen, Lady Montfort, and we haven't come empty-handed.
There is some noise coming from inside the room, but I'm afraid I will be seen if I try to peek inside the room.
This is...
My mother trails off in awe. The best thing to pique my curiosity even more.
This is a sword forged by a holy metal called Chrodium. It is an extremely rare metal, and I urge you to be exceedingly careful with how you wield it.
One man explains. That's all it takes for my curiosity to shoot up. Placing my hands on the window ledge, I slowly raise myself up, enough to glimpse the form of the two men and my mother as they gather together around the sword. I can only make out a powerful gleam before I have to duck again. The cold has affected my fingers, and my grip is tenuous at best. If I try to hang on to the ledge, I might slip and fall, attracting attention to myself, which is the last thing I want. My teeth start chattering uncontrollably. I slap my hand over my mouth in an attempt to control it and focus on the conversation.
You're saying this can kill him?
My mother asks.
Not much can injure Eamon, let alone kill him. But this, accompanied by the spells of the elders, should work.
Do not worry. Some of the other families have been made aware of this, and I will work to convince the rest too. He won't escape again,
Fiona declares.
We have all the faith in you, Lady Montfort.
I've managed to find a husband for my daughter, too, just as your letter mentioned. But are you sure that will deter him from going after her?
What? She found me a husband? My pulse speeds up as shock and fear accumulate in my heart. When did this happen, and why was I not informed? But then it dawns on me that my mother wouldn't have told me until the last moment, all so she could ensure the wedding would go smoothly and I would not put up a protest. After all, despite my feigned disavowal of Eamon, she is aware I am not interested in finding myself married off to some stranger, though it's all my mother has ever wanted. Now, despite my shivering, my lips flatten into a thin line of determination, for I know I will do whatever I can to prevent such a marriage from taking place.
We are absolutely sure. Once your daughter is mated to another man, Eamon will no longer have a claim over her.
The man assures her. So this is where my mother's odd idea that marriage is the only way to hide the pulsations from my birthmark had come from. These two men have been the ones to put it into her head that the only way to subdue the pulsations of the mark is to mate me to someone else. They continue to outline a plan, and as I'd guessed before, it involved using me as bait for when my mother has secured the cooperation of all the other families. With the Rhodium sword and the ancient spells, they still only hope to neutralize Eamon, which tells me just how powerful he is. Yet it seems that my mother isn't the only one who wants Eamon caught. These gentlemen and the supreme authority seem to be hunting for him too.
God, Eamon, what did you get yourself into?
My limbs are frozen from the cold outside. It's to the point that I'm barely in control of my movements anymore. As I try to step away from the window to get back to the house, I barely take a few steps before I get a cramp in my lower leg. Limping for a couple of steps, I don't manage to regain my balance as I fall face down onto the even colder ground. A pained cry is wrenched from my lips, despite my best attempts to stay quiet.
What was that?
One of the men suddenly asks.
What? I didn't hear anything, my mother says.
Check the window,
the other suggests. I punch my calf as I try to drag myself back up, but even so, I'm more than certain that I will be caught. Never in a million years will I be able to make it back to the house undetected, and if these people also have magical powers, then... Fear grows in my breast, just as the pain in my leg continues to echo in my body. The seconds tick by as the men come closer to the window. Before I know it, though, strong arms pull me into an equally strong embrace. I blink in confusion. One moment I'm behind my house, struggling to move my frozen limbs. The next, I'm in a luxurious chamber, the fire sparking to life as heat engulfs the entire room. The sudden change in scenery would be enough to scare anyone, but I'm not afraid. His touch sears my chilled skin, his smoky scent invading my nostrils. I know exactly who this is, just as I know he always comes in my hour of need. Amen, I whisper, as he carries me to the big upholstered bed. You came for me. He doesn't reply, as he sets me on the edge of the bed. A thick blanket appears on my shoulders, and I pull it tighter around me as I lose myself in its warmth. Amen takes a step back, regarding me closely. He's wearing a loose silk shirt, half unbuttoned at the neck, and a pair of black trousers. His white hair flows down his back, the sheen making it look silver in the firelight. Slowly raising my gaze, I take in his features, that otherworldly beauty that makes my heart clench. His jaw is strong and masculine, his cheekbones sharp and defined, a mix of beauty and danger that never fails to take my breath away. And then there are his eyes, those pale, almost white eyes that spark with life whenever he gazes at me. Like now. He peruses me from head to toe, his jaw twitching when he sees my deplorable state.
You're hurt,
he states curtly. The frost had taken away the sensation from my limbs, so I can't localize the pain, nor do I feel anything but a dull ache radiating from every part of my body. It's only when he drops to his knees in front of me, laying his hands on my knees, that I spot the ugly bruises forming from my fall. It's nothing. I give him a tight smile. I don't even feel it.
But I see it,
he counters, raising his unyielding gaze to me.
You can't get hurt, Lizzie mine. Not under my watch.
Well, technically I didn't fall under your watch. I raise a brow at him. After all, he's been missing for 2 months.
I'm never not watching you.
He enunciates slowly, the meaning clear. What?
I may not be with you at all times, Lizzie, but I'm always watching. I'm always there for you.
Then why? I frown. Why would you not come for me? I ask dejectedly. How many times had I yearned for him, wanted to see him, only to be ignored for months at a time?
It's complicated.
He sighs. Uncomplicate it for me, please. Help me understand this. I urge softly as I place my hands on his shoulders, stopping his movements. You're always giving me vague answers and explanations and expect me to accept everything without questioning you. It doesn't work like that, Amen. I tell him gently as I cup his cheek with my hand, swirling my thumb across his marble-like skin. I know your nature, and I haven't shied away from you. I know you're capable of extreme destruction, yet I haven't run away. I'm still here, so whatever it is you're keeping from me, you can tell me. It won't change how I feel about you, but I do need to know where we stand. He's staring at me with a frightening intensity. Slowly, he takes my hand in his, bringing my palm to his lips for a searing kiss.
You want the truth?
I nod.
I was petrified.
He admits in a thick voice.
After you told me what a brute I was terrified to face you again. I merely wanted to give you time to come to terms with everything.
Emotion laces his every word as he opens up to me, revealing his weakness. This man, this strong, strong man, was terrified of what I would think of him. I don't know why, but that one admission has the power to make my heart stop in my chest before expanding like never before, all for him, with feelings for him. Without taking his eyes off me, he materializes some sort of tincture that he applies softly to my injured flesh. After he's done, he bandages each wound carefully, as if he has plenty of experience with such things. I'm here, I whisper. I'm not going anywhere, Eamon. If you want me, you have me. I confess, knowing just how much power I'm giving him with those few words. Yet as I utter them out loud, I know them to be true. My entire being knows them to be true. From the moment I'd met him, I felt a strange connection to him, one that befuddled me and messed with my senses. He hypnotized me with his presence before he seduced me with his words. He awoke my body with his decadent sensuality, just as he made my heart sing with every little gesture, every proof of his devotion. Mayhap this is madness, pure, unadulterated madness. Yet somehow I know he is in it with me. He feels it just as much as I do.
From the beginning, I've been trying to find a way for us to be together, Lizzie mine.
He sighs as he leans to lay a kiss on one knee, then the other.
And I'm closer than ever to accomplishing it.
How? I ask the question as I wet my lips.
I should tell you more about this over dinner.
He flashes me a smile.
There is much we need to talk about. But first, are you warm enough? Do you need anything?
I shake my head, watching him curiously. There's a frightening dichotomy to him, to the tender and sweet Eamon that I know, and the bloodthirsty monster I'd last seen. It's as though there are two different entities residing in the same body. As that thought arises, I whip my gaze to his. He shakes his head slowly, amusement playing at his lips.
No, Lizzie, I am not possessed. All of this is me. The killer.
He whispers as he leans into me, brushing his lips across my cheek before he reaches my ear, nibbling at my skin.
The lover. This is all me, love. You can't have one without the other.
I want you, I tell him with all the emotion I can muster. All that you are, Eamon. His lips tip up into a satisfied smile, and before I know it, we're in a different room. What? What is this? I ask in awe as I look around, taking in the racks upon racks of gowns and luxurious furs. At the end of the room, there is a full wall full of jewelry cases, diamonds upon diamonds, pearls and other precious stones. Everything must be worth a fortune. Yet, as I'm admiring everything, I can't stop the ugly jealousy that takes root within me. Whose room is this? Whose clothes are these?
This is all yours, love.
Eamon murmurs, not for the first time sensing my switch in mood.
I bought them for you.
You did? I blink, surprised.
Choose something beautiful for tonight. I'm keeping you all to myself until dawn.
he tells me as he takes a step back, letting me move around the room. But how? I mumble to myself, still stunned by the contents of the room and the fact that he'd gotten it all for me.
I have more surprises. The night is young, love. Let's take advantage of it.
Nodding effusively, I turn my attention to the wardrobe, browsing the selection of clothes he'd chosen for me. My lips tip up as I imagine Eamon in all his imposing glory, shopping for women's clothes, remarking on colour and style in search of the perfect gown. There must be at least 100 gowns in this room, for all types of occasions. Locating the evening section, I go by colour since it's obvious that all are exquisite and high quality. Eamon? I tilt my head to peek at him. He's sitting in the middle of the room, his hands behind his back, his legs apart, his stance powerful and warrior-like. When he hears me call his name, he whips his head in my direction. What's your favourite colour?
Mine?
He asks in a perplexed tone, pointing to his chest. I nod, a hidden smile on my lips.
Red. Why?
Red it is, then, I declare, as my hands settle on a deep red gown. We have an entire night together. I have an entire night to entice him to touch me. After all, how many times have I thought about this in the last months, especially after that kiss that left me entirely unfulfilled and longing for more? I'm guessing you won't give me privacy to change, will you? I raise a brow at him as I present him with my choice for the night.
You'll need a lady's maid, Lizzie, and I'm nothing if not accommodating. You'll see that these hands can do a great deal of things.
He says as he brings his hands down my shoulders, the tips of his fingers lightly tapping my flesh. A gasp escapes me as air whooshes around me, tenderly caressing my skin in all the right places, in all the hidden places. You rogue! I accuse playfully when I look down at my suddenly naked body. You don't need your hands for anything. Despite not having been naked before someone of the male sex before, I don't feel shy. If anything, all maidenly concerns are thrown out the window once I see the way he looks at me, raw hunger emanating from him. He circles me in a predatory manner, his nostrils flaring as he takes in my body. Goosebumps cover my entire skin, whether from the light breeze or from his probing gaze, I don't know.
Lizzie mine, you'll see just how I use my hands on you.
He chuckles as he stops behind me. His breath is on my nape, his presence absolutely intoxicating me, until I become light-headed, almost as if I'd consumed copious amounts of alcohol. So, what are you waiting for? I ask as I lean into him, undulating my body against his. His lips part, his breathing intensifying. Yet, just as I think he's going to finally touch me, he merely steps back. With swift movements, he helps me put my dress on, fastening it at the back. Every now and then his fingers brush against my bare skin, eliciting a soft gasp from me as I imagine he's changed his mind. But as I find myself fully dressed, I belatedly realize it was all part of his plan. Though initially I thought to entice him with my naked body and the desire I witnessed in his eyes, in the end, I'd been the one seduced, my skin flushed, my heart hammering in my chest every time I feel him get closer to me. I swivel to face him, narrowing my eyes at him.
Seduction isn't merely the consummation of the act,
he tells me with a knowing smirk.
Seduction is in the anticipation, Lizzie mine. It's in wondering whether every little touch will amount to more.
He pauses as he caresses my face with the back of his hand.
Seduction is the intention without the certainty. It's all in the element of surprise.
My breath hitches as I find myself lost in his eyes, so much so that he surprises me once more as he disappears only to appear behind me. Cold metal touches my skin as he fastens a necklace around my neck.
Beautiful jewelry for a beautiful lady.
He murmurs in my ear, laying a soft kiss on my shoulder blade. I'm entirely too dazed by everything to be able to react in any manner, except awe. There's something about Eamon that goes beyond his strange abilities. Maybe it's the way he holds himself, as if he's the guardian of some ancient knowledge. Maybe it's the play of emotions on his face that I sometimes witness, the pain and the loneliness that ravage his features before he remembers to put on his carefree mask. The truth is that no matter how deeply I feel for him, there's so much I don't know, so much I wish to know, but I won't until he thinks I am ready to do so. He is the one dictating the pace of our relationship. Yet, in spite of all the control he has over the situation and over me, there's this certainty that every little move he makes, he does so only after he's carefully deliberated it, only after he's read me thoroughly.
Shall we?
I have one question, Eamon. Answer it truthfully, and I'll go wherever you want me to. I suddenly turn to him. His eyes turn molten as he regards me intently, waiting. Did you kill that girl? The one with the birthmark like mine? Did you do what my mother and the Coven are accusing you of? He blinks, slowly.
What do you think, Nessie?
He murmurs, his question loaded.
Do you think I did it?
No, I whisper. I don't know how, but I know you wouldn't. Just like I believe you are not with me for my mark, I say, as I bring his hand over my heart, the heat from his palm transferring to my naked skin and making me shiver in response.
Trust your intuition, always.
He gives me a tight smile.
I might not always be able to tell you everything, but know that everything I do is with your best interests at heart.
He pauses briefly.
To answer your question directly, no, I did not kill her, nor am I after that mark, your mark. In fact, the Coven doesn't have the least idea what it means and how it came to exist.
He trails off. And you do? He nods, his gaze searing. Thank you for telling me. I smile as I lay a kiss on his knuckles.
Even if the entire world hates me, even if they all revile me, as long as I have your love and your regard, nothing else matters. I can be the enemy of people, Lizzie, but if I am your lover, it's more than enough for me. I told you before.
He purrs huskily.
I may be bad to everyone else, but to you, just to you, I'll be good.
I don't get to reply as double doors open before us. Tucking my arm in the crook of his elbow, Eamon takes me through a small ambulatory before we reach the hallway. It seems that this time he's decided against teleportation. The entire corridor is brimming with light. There are candles everywhere, and I can tell he spared no expense with this. As we walk further and further, I'm floored by the sheer size of the location, especially as we reach the staircase, the top of it overlooking the foyer and what looks to be the entrance to the dining room. A crystal chandelier hangs from the ceiling, so high I don't know how anyone would have reached there to replace the candles. Yet this is Eamon we're talking about. Of course he would be able to replace them, perhaps even with a snap of a finger. "What is this, Eamon? It's absolutely stunning," I exclaim, as we slowly go down the stairs.
"Do you like it?"
He smiles, pleased with my praise. "Like it? I adore it. I've been to plenty of balls and soirees in some of the most beautiful locations in England, yet I can't recall ever seeing something so splendid. My opinions are reinforced as we enter the dining room. Entirely bathed in candlelight, it makes for a stark contrast with the darkness of the night. The room is fully adorned with ancient Greek motifs, while the gilded furniture boasts a Louis XIV style. "It must have cost you a fortune," I whisper, as I note the artwork on display, all pieces by reputed artists.
"It better. I made it for you."
I stop, my fingers digging into his arm. My eyes open and close in confusion. "For me?" I ask in a small voice, afraid I haven't understood him properly.
"I built this entire place for you, love,"
he confirms.
"I made it just as I knew you'd like it."
"But how? When?" I mumble, at a loss for words. Everything about this location speaks of quality and the best materials money can buy. Nothing hurried. How could Eamon have built something like this so fast, when it can take years to build something so flawless?
"I've been waiting for you for a long time."
He gives me a sad smile.
"When all you have is time, you devote it to perfection,"
he replies, a note of melancholy lacing his words. He leads me around the big dining table, pulling a chair for me. When I see him moving to the other side, I grab his sleeve, stopping him. His brows go up in question as he looks at me. I slowly shake my head as I bite my lip. "Stay," I whisper. I don't want to have him across from me, so far away. We're together at leisure for the first time in forever, and all I want is to have him close, feel his body heat, and let his deep rumble reverberate through my being.
"As you wish."
He gives me a nod as he takes a seat next to me, but not before I spot a small smile pulling at his lips. It pleases him, too. Though the table is set, the food isn't here yet. Just as I'm about to wonder if he'd hired servants, the food appears out of nowhere. Well, there goes my answer. It seems we are to be truly alone for the night. "How does this work? This conjuring things out of nowhere?" I ask as I watch him portion a piece of steak before placing it on my plate.
"They're not out of nowhere. I'm not that powerful. I merely call to me things which I am familiar with, things I have interacted with before."
"So, for example, if I asked you for a pie, would you be able to get it here?" He shakes his head.
"I can only call forth specific things I have touched and know the location of."
I nod thoughtfully. "That makes sense. What else can you do?" I inquire eagerly. After the reveal of his true nature, we'd never gotten around to talking about it or what it means for him. "How did you turn your hand into a sharp blade to kill that man? What about the mental suggestion? Oh, and reading minds?" I keep firing one question after another at him. I'd had plenty of time to think of all the things I wanted to know about him, all the curious aspects of his arcane nature. He chuckles at my enthusiasm.
"You're adorable,"
he suddenly compliments. I don't know if it's the excitement of the moment or his honeyed tongue, but I feel myself blush from head to toe. He notes it too, because his gaze suddenly darkens as he trails his eyes from my face to the generous décolletage of the dress and the swell of my breasts where my flush had extended to. Suddenly, he clears his throat as he wrenches his gaze away from that area.
My powers are mostly combat-based, though I've learned to give them other uses. The teleportation you speak of, it's my enhanced speed in a fight.
My eyes widen as I take in all the information. Combat? You were a soldier. He nods.
I am a war machine, love. I was built with the express purpose to kill and slaughter.
He says as he lifts his right hand. Under my very gaze, I see it morph into a sharp blade.
My mental abilities, too, are an extension of that.
He smiles bitterly.
For interrogation purposes.
He clarifies.
That isn't to say that I was born this powerful. I trained for centuries to get to the level I am now.
Though his tone is moderately objective, I can tell this is an area of his life that he doesn't like talking about. Now that I know at least something, I decide not to probe further. Can you read my mind all the time? I wet my lips, awaiting his answer with apprehension. Can he see everything I feel for him, and the way my mind is inundated by thoughts of him? That since the moment we've met, he's been my very own elusive obsession.
Not all the time.
He answers ruefully.
I can do it if I concentrate enough, but some thoughts are louder than others, and just like how people have better mental defenses than others.
He explains.
In your case, I can read your loudest thoughts, but not all of them.
Thank God, I whisper, exhaling in relief. He throws his head back and laughs.
Oh, my dear Lizzie, what is it that you hide in that pretty head of yours and you don't want me finding out?
His lips are tipped up in amusement, his countenance relaxed, unlike I've ever seen him. Before, he would always be tense, almost rigid. And though I'd been drawn to that magnetism he exudes when he channels his warrior self, I can't help but feel my pulse pick up at the handsome picture he makes like this. Blithe, carefree, absolutely breathtaking. He looks like home. You might find out if you're a good boy. I wink at him playfully. He bursts out laughing.
Damn, if I wouldn't spend an eternity just like this. You, me.
He pauses as he catches my eye.
Us. Forever. How does that sound, Lizzie mine?
He murmurs thickly. You might have to convince me, I counter cheekily. But is it true that you're immortal? He chuckles.
You could say so, but that doesn't mean I am impervious. I can get mortally injured, but I have a very, very long lifespan.
The image of the gleaming sword flashes in my eyes. Rhodium, I whisper. His eyes widen with alarm. There were two men visiting my mother. They gave her a sword to kill you with, and they mentioned it was forged from rhodium, the only thing that can harm you. He takes a deep breath, exhaling slowly.
I know who you are talking about. Yes, it is correct that rhodium can kill me.
He explains, telling me that the only thing that can kill him is a blow with a pure rhodium weapon to his heart. Anything other than that would injure him, but not enough to finish him off. The mere fact that he's telling me in detail how he could be killed means that he trusts me implicitly, a fact which warms my insides. Aren't you scared, then? I ask, biting my lip. He releases a dry laugh.
Those two have been working against me for a long time. They didn't succeed last time. It's unlikely they will this time.
I narrow my eyes at him. What about the wedding advice? They instructed my mother to marry me off because... I pause, blushing as I say the next words. If I take my husband's seed, you will stop looking for me, or rather, my mark. The moment he hears my words, the temperature drops in the room, his eyes shifting colour. From the light blue from before, they turn a deep red before settling on the blackest black.
Nothing would stop me from coming to you, Lizzie, but that would definitely piss me off. And when I'm pissed...
He flashes his teeth in a predatory smile.
Few people survive.
So it's not true. He shakes his head.
They assume that if you were touched by another, I would renounce my claim on you, which is erroneous from three points of view.
He says matter-of-factly as he raises three fingers.
One, you're mine. No buts, no conditions or prerequisites. You're simply mine.
His words make me warm and fuzzy, so I nod along.
Two, no man would ever get close enough to you to do so.
I roll my eyes at that, since I haven't forgotten his little stunt with Viscount Berkeley. Did he really have to scar the man for dancing with me?
And three?
He smirks arrogantly.
You would never let another man touch you.
My brows shoot up. That's rather presumptuous of you, I challenge.
I'd rather call it confidence, but it's a fact, isn't it, Lizzie mine? Have you ever felt anything at all for another man?
I don't reply. Merely averting my gaze. He is right in that regard. I've never felt even a glimmer of something for another man, but I'm not about to inflate his already enormous ego. Then you should know that according to my mother, she's already found me a husband, I add flippantly, watching him from the corner of my eye. He doesn't react, he doesn't rage as I would have expected him to.
So she has.
He merely answers, lounging in his seat. Still, his eyes are on me, his mouth curled at the corners, and that tells me everything I need to know. You had something to do with it, I accuse. I know you did. What did you do? Kill the poor man? Ship him off to the colonies? His smile widens.
I'll let you in on a little secret.
He leans in to whisper.
We are in the colonies.
What? I squeak. Before he can stop me, I pull my chair back, getting up from the table and going straight to the exit. Pulling the door open, I'm met by a completely foreign sight. We're on a hill, and before me stretches what looks to be a village.
This will be our home, Lizzie.
He whispers in my ear.
Away from everyone who is against us. Away from the entire world.
You? Where are we? I swallow hard against the panic that threatens to overtake me.
Northern Massachusetts. Your new home.
But how? I don't understand. I say as I turn to face him. Taking my arm, he closes the door before he leads me back to the dinner table. Seating me down, he places more food on my plate, urging me to eat as he starts recounting his plan.
I know you love your family, despite their best efforts to hunt me down and break us apart. I will not hurt them. as long as they love you and never harm you. I swear to you that I will never lay a finger on them, Lizzie.
The sincerity in his voice is unmistakable, as is the fact that I believe him. I fully believe he would never hurt them.
You've been wondering why I've been so absent, and the truth is that I've been planning a way for us to be together without having to fight against your family or the coven. Just a way we could be together, only the two of us.
But I purse my lips. You're immortal. I whisper the obvious. How would this work when I would grow old and die while he would just...
Don't.
He growls.
Don't even think of that. I told you I would take care of everything, and I mean it, Lizzie. You will never die on me again.
He tells me resolutely. Walk me through this, Eamon, from the beginning.
I knew about your mother's quest to find you a husband, and instead of fighting it, I decided to play her at her own game. You will indeed wed someone.
He pauses.
Me.
My eyes widen. What?
Your family and everyone will, of course, think that you are married to someone of your mother's choice, but it shan't be so.
He proceeds to explain that he will use an irrelevant man and gain control of his mind throughout the courtship period and until the wedding takes place.
After the vows have been said, to me, of course.
He gives me a sheepish smile.
We will relocate to the colonies to start a new life.
And my mother won't catch on? I ask skeptically.
She won't be able to tell. And despite what your mother and that coven of hers seem to think, I'm not averse to holy water, nor holy ground, nor any of those silly runes she's placed all over her house to keep me out. So you see, she has a very poor understanding of who, what I am.
If you're sure this will work, then...
I am certain it will work.
He assures me gently. Then what about the other part? The immortal problem? He chuckles.
There is one item I am searching for, Lizzie mine, and if I'm correct, that should stop you from growing old, or...
He drifts off as his eyes rove over my body.
Being so fragile.
Fragile? What do you mean? He scowls.
With the way Fiona bound your abilities, you cannot heal at all. That means I could hurt you if I'm not careful.
He swallows hard, and I spot the vulnerability in his eyes, the fact that he is terrified of hurting me.
And I could never forgive myself if I hurt you in any way.
Suddenly, it dawns on me why he's been treating me with kid gloves, why he'd always kept his distance. He's afraid of hurting me. God, but his features are torn up with such immense anguish that my heart squeezes in my chest. He can't bring himself to touch me because he thinks he might harm me in any way. Getting out of my seat, I slip between him and the dinner table. He's watching me closely, his gaze heated, his eyes hooded as he awaits my next movement. Pushing his empty plates out of my way, I hoist myself up the table, placing my legs on either side of him. So close, too tantalizingly close. His hands automatically come to rest on my bare ankles, his touch so delicious, I cannot help but yearn for more. Yet first, I must have my answers. I bring my hands to his face, cupping his cheeks and slowly stroking his skin with my thumbs. Not for the first time, I find myself getting lost in his gaze, and the hypnotizing combination of his physical presence and searing touch. I take in his broad shoulders, his prominent collarbones, and the muscles that seem to hide under his shirt. I look at him like the exciting, desirable, and oh-so-arousing man that he is, and I only have one question. Is that why you won't bed me? Because you're afraid to hurt me? I ask softly. His jaw clenches as he gives me a brisk, pained nod.
I can't trust myself with that yet, love.
He releases a weary sigh.
I want to touch you more than I've wanted anything in my life, but I can't risk it. I can't risk that I'll become lost to sensation and everything you make me feel. You already saw that one kiss got me so worked up. I drew blood from your lovely lips.
He pauses as he gently caresses the column of my neck. I swallow audibly as his palm closes over my throat, the hold light, yet menacing. In spite of that, all I want is for him to squeeze tighter, touch me everywhere. God, but I want everything he can give me. Pain, pleasure, love. I'll take him as he is. Violent, brutal, suave. I'll take the killer and the lover. If only he'd give it to me.
Fuck. When you look at me like that, it's fucking impossible to resist you.
He curses, his features tensing.
But it's been so long since I've been with someone that I don't know how I would react. How frenzied I would become.
My eyes widen. How long? I ask before I can help myself. His eyes flash at me.
More than 1,000 years.
I gawk at him, though his answer makes my insides flutter in an unexpected way. 1,000 years, I repeat in awe. And now you're mine. He shakes his head, a sad smile on his lips.
I've always been yours, love. Always.
He states emphatically. Then touch me. Do something. Anything. I inhale sharply. Please, Eamon, I burn for you. I plead, just as I take hold of his hand, luring it from my neck to my breasts, urging him to touch me. Anything to quench this incessant thirst I have for him.
Lizzie.
He releases a deep, guttural sound, his features contorted in pain as he visibly fights himself and his own desires. I can see the conflict in his gaze, the way he's looking at me as if he'd die if he didn't touch me in the next second, but at the same time is entirely too afraid to take the plunge. We don't have to do everything, just something. I know there's more to lovemaking than copulation. His eyes flash at me.
And how would you know that?
He grinds his teeth, a murderous aura surrounding him. Emma, I whisper. She told me that her fiancé touched her. I take hold of his other hand, moving it under my dress, up my leg, until it reaches my inner thigh. Here.
Lizzie.
He growls. Before I know it, he's out of his seat, the chair flying back across the room from his residual strength, and I finally realize his reticence. He is absolutely superhuman. A demon. God, he is magnificent. He doesn't allow me any time to change my mind, as he has my dress bunched around my hips, his hands parting my legs for him. I'm not wearing my drawers, or anything that could impede his access.
Fuck, Lizzie. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
He curses to himself, his eyes turning to molten lava as he lowers his gaze to my core. I'm almost ashamed of the unusual wetness that gushes out of me, and I barely fight the urge to squeeze my legs shut. It's only his appraisal and the look of pure wonder that he's sporting that has me equally frozen to the spot.
One touch,
he says, as if trying to convince himself.
Just one touch, one taste.
He breathes harshly. One touch. I nod enthusiastically, curious about what he's going to do to me, dying to feel his big hands on my body. That thought alone makes my core clench, more wetness accumulating between my legs. Sorry, I whisper, making to shield myself from his view.
Sorry? Why the hell would you be sorry? Fuck, your sweet little cunt is the most beautiful sight I've ever seen. So plump and rosy. So fucking mine.
He says, right as he dips one finger between my folds, gathering all the moisture and swirling it around. I'm so sensitive there that I can't help but arch my back, moaning at the barest touch. God, but I am wanton. So damn wanton. And I can't find it in me to care. Nothing else matters but this moment. Him. My Eamon.